Fred Hahn, owner of the best-selling fitness book, The Slow Burn Fitness Revolution, wants to share the secret to ending the wave of adolescent ill health and turning your child into a physical dynamo. Fred Hahn has been a professional trainer for over 2 decades and is certified by the American Council on Exercise. He is the founder and head of the renowned personal training studio, Serious Strength, Inc., and has been working with kids in his Mighty Tykes and Teens program for the past 7 years. He has been interviewed by Dr. Mehmet Oz and Bob Green on Oprah and Friends, The Today Show, CNN, WABC-TV, and featured in Allure, Family Circle, Woman's World, and Time Out New York, just to name a scant few. He blogs for the Huffington Post and is a featured contributor to the Nutrition and Metabolism Society. Fred, welcome to Thinking Out Loud on It's Your Health on WUML 91.5 FM.
Very much.
I'm very glad to have you. Now, Fred, in the introduction of your terrific book, Strong Kids, Healthy Kids, you write, quote, "Let me say right here and now that I will tell you, sometimes bluntly, that my many widespread beliefs about fat loss, athletic performance, diet, and nasty little four-letter word, and exercise for kids are completely false, dangerous, and inane." Can you tell us some of these beliefs, Fred?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Sure, I'd love to. It's interesting that earlier in the introduction you had mentioned that shattering some long-held beliefs.
Yes.
And I have to point out that we all need to recognize, and I think many of the people who listen do recognize, that sometimes we believe things even though we may not know them to be true.
Uh-huh.
And I'm talking specifically about things that are in nutrition and health. For example, that maybe that fat makes us fat.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously something we hear in magazines and books and television. We don't. And many of us don't even necessarily believe that that's true, but it almost, because it's just pounded into our head, very often a lot of falsehoods become realities in our minds, and we tend to believe things as true when they really aren't true. We've never actually studied them to learn that they're true. It's just, like Mark Twain said, the truth is easy to kill, but a lie well told is immortal.
Well, it sounds like it's like the dominant paradigm of the way people are thinking. It's just that's what they've heard. That's what's out there. So that's why your book is so wonderful, because you're going to say, wait a second, let's think about what's going on, and this isn't what's out there. So,
right. More specifically, science as a guide, using science as a guide rather than fitness or nutritional lore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are lots of organizations that have a bent towards one way of eating or another. Obviously, we see this in Washington with lobbyists wanting to get things done their way. But the fact of the matter is we know a heck of a lot about adolescent, about obesity in general, and we've known for over 100 years, and certainly since the 1960s and earlier, what the main cause of obesity is. And for children and adults alike, adolescent obesity, or obesity in general, is a disorder of excess fat accumulation. And what I mean by that is, for some reason, some people who are overfat or obese store more of the foods that they eat as fat rather than have them available for energy. So it's an important distinction between looking at just eating more food. Very often, obese children or adults will be accused of just eating too much food. Well, you're overfat, you're obese because you eat too much. Well, that may not necessarily be the case, and one of the reasons why is because we know lots of people who do eat a lot and they are not fat.
Yeah, it's true.
And we know a lot of people who do not eat a lot of food and they are. What it boils down to is more of a hormonal game than a numbers game.
Oh, interesting.
And the specific hormone is insulin.
Okay.
So for both adults and children alike, some are very insulin insensitive. One of insulin's main roles in the body is to help you store body fat. Yeah, like type 1 diabetics who do not produce insulin, they have to inject insulin intravenously. Type 1 diabetics are almost always painfully thin. In fact, it's virtually impossible to become overfat, or certainly not obese, if you're a type 1 diabetic. Some people, when they eat carbohydrate, and carbohydrate is the main food source that stimulates the release of insulin, are so insensitive to the insulin that their bodies have to produce much, much, much more of it in order to regulate blood sugar.
I see.
So one person eats a cookie, they're very insulin sensitive, boom, that sugar is uptaken into the cells, and it's gone. Whereas other people have to produce much, much, much more insulin, which in turn forces the body to lean more towards fat storage. And so when a child says, I'm still hungry, Mom. Says, well, how could you be hungry? You just ate a half an hour ago. Well, I am. the reason is because that particular child or adult is geared more towards fat storage due to their insulin insensitivity, which can be genetic in nature and is in many cases.
Okay.
Or is caused by a lifetime of eating too much sugar, which causes insulin insensitivity.
Okay. So, now, I'm guessing that exercise can have a role in helping with the insulin. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. But most people think of exercise, and especially with adolescent obesity, you've got to get those kids moving because it burns calories. That's not the reason why exercise, and in fact, with children, increasing their physical activity does nothing to improve adolescent obesity. And I tried to get this point across on several other radio shows that I've done, but again, it's one of those, it's a paradigm paralysis.
Exactly, I was going to say. I'm very open-minded, so. But yeah, no, I mean, I've been in the health field for 20-plus years, and I've never heard that before, but I believe it. I mean, you know, I read your book, and it makes sense, and again, that's why I'm so glad you're here today, because it is, it's hard to shift away from what everybody, you know, thinks is fact.
Right, and I mean, look, and so many people are doing the traditional, are making the traditional efforts, making the, you know, trying to get children to be more physically active and reducing the total amount of fat in their diets, and it isn't working. Children are becoming fatter than they ever have before. You know, one of the definitions of insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting a different result. So I like to say, like Carl Sagan said in his book, the late Carl Sagan said in his book, The Demon-Haunted World, Science as a Candle in the Dark, is why not let go of all of the traditional notions that we have or had and let science be a guide. And science clearly dictates that carbohydrate ingestion, especially refined carbohydrate, is the cause of obesity. In some people who are very insulin sensitive, they can get away with eating cookies and cakes. We all know people like that.
Yeah.
Anything they want, and they don't get obese.
Mm-hmm.
But those who do have that issue. And so the cause of excessive calorie consumption is simply an outcome of most of the calories that an insulin insensitive person suffers from, is because those calories are stored as fat instead of used for fuel.
I see. So that's why if you want to, you know, add the strength training, you're going to build more muscle,
right,
which is going to have a positive effect. And I'll let you tell us.
You're exactly right. And that is what research shows, that strength training, lifting weights, is the only form of exercise that actually has a positive impact on both adolescent and adult obesity. So, and the reason for that is, as you mentioned, you can, in fact, significantly increase the strength and lean tissue of, obviously, of adults, but also of children. And I'm talking more specifically children who are in their teens than in adolescent years.
Oh, okay.
But you still can increase the lean mass, meaning muscle and bone, of younger kids, say from ages 6, 7, 8 years old up until about before they reach maturity. It's not as significant, obviously, as with a teen, but it still works.
Yeah, so there are things that you can say like a 6-year-old could do, and it would obviously, and you have exercises in the books that obviously depend on the child's age.
Right.
Okay.
Right, exactly. So my daughter started when she was 6 years old.
Oh, cool.
Started, you know, you can do pull-ups, you can do push-ups, you can, if you're a member of a local gym, you can bring your child to use the machines. And I prefer that children use machines over free weights because it's much safer.
Oh, good. You know, if I was thinking about that, I was going to ask you what you thought was better.
Yeah.
And you have both in the book, which is nice, photos of kids using both, which is good.
Yeah, because some people can't afford to go to any kind of a gym, but they can afford, obviously, to maybe buy an inexpensive set of dumbbells. You get them on eBay and do a home program, which is nice that the parent, the mother and the dad, and the brother and sister can do it, all do it together. And so it has significant, profound effects on children, strength training does.
What are some of the other benefits of strength training for kids?
Well, it improves their mood, it improves insulin sensitivity, because they get stronger, they get better at their sports.
That's good.
That improves their self-confidence and their self-esteem. Obviously with obesity, if there are other issues with diabetes and high blood pressure, resistance training significantly improves those conditions. It really should be, and used to be, the foundation of an exercise program. Way back, even in the 30s and 40s, unfortunately they didn't use it with young girls because of the idiotic thoughts that, girls should be this way and boys should be that way. And really, at least I'm trying to just sort of bring back what we already know and have known to be true about the amazing benefits of, I like to call it strength training. Most people know it as weightlifting. Now, the safety issue is something that I think most people get afraid of. Oh, isn't it going to stunt my child's growth?
Yes, I'm sure a lot of parents get concerned about things like that.
And it's all just wives' tales. It's never been shown to be true that resistance training or strength training is dangerous to growth. In fact, the exact opposite is true. It enhances bone growth. It enhances muscle growth. And when I say that, I often get afraid that people are going to think, oh, well, I don't want my kid to be an Arnold Schwarzenegger. That, of course, would never be the case. We're talking a very small percentage of an increase in their bone density. And I should also mention that if your child, whoever's listening, if your child is an athlete, not only will strength training improve that your child's sport, whatever that sport may be, but it will also increase their resistance to injury.
Which
is a very important consideration, obviously.
That is important.
Involved in gymnastics or football or baseball or whatever sport soccer that the child is engaged in. And especially for young women, because young women tend to be more prone to certain types of injuries, like ACL injuries, knee injuries.
Yes, my daughter has horrible pronation. I mean, she stands, she's almost six, and her feet, her knees go in and her feet go in, and that's exactly how I was as a kid, and I still have knee problems now. I have to be careful, and I didn't get strong enough.
Yeah, well, that's something you can remedy, and certainly something your daughter can remedy.
Yeah.
Tailored resistance training program.
Yeah, that would you recommend somebody get started if they've never had their child, lift any weights, and obviously it depends on the age as well.
Yeah, the best way to get started, I wrote my book in a manner that addresses that particular.
Yes, which is good.
I'm not going to say it's not for advanced children. In fact, if a child is already weightlifting, they could still use the principles in my book to enhance what they're already doing. But I've written it in such a manner so that the adult or caregiver could actually be the child's personal trainer.
Oh, that's good.
So I worked very hard to make sure that my book was not full of physio babble. And it was really more straightforward and very easy for a parent or caregiver to work with their child.
And if someone's wondering how often, how long you take, is it 3 times a week for 20 minutes, or, what are the guidelines for that?
Well, research shows very clearly, research done by Dr. Wayne Westcott and Dr. Avery Fagenbaum.
Yes, I like them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're very, very thorough researchers and very kind people. I know them both. And they have done more research on the subject of adolescent strengthening than anyone else that I'm aware of on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And all of their research indicates that for non-athletic children, meaning children who are not involved in hardcore sports, where they're at swim practice every 5 days a week, twice weekly, 15 to 20-minute sessions produce all of the benefits that strength training can bestow.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah,
that's hardly any time at all.
It's really not much time. In fact, our Strong Kids, Healthy Kids program here at Sirius Strength, the children come for 15 minutes twice a week. We recommend twice a week. But even a once-a-week 15-minute weightlifting strength training session produces positive results. Not as good as two, research shows, but it still produces positive results. If your child is an athlete, then once a week training is better because they're already involved in hard work, so to speak. And so the body, needing recovery in order to build, requires a little bit more rest when the child's an athlete. So it appears that one session, one weekly session, works better for athletes, and two weekly sessions work better for non-athletic children.
Okay. And Fred, where are you located if people wanted to actually go, you know, to your studio and get involved in your programs?
Yeah. We're located, Sirius Strength is located on the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Ah, oh, sounds nice. I love New York.
Yeah, right down the street from the Museum of Natural History. It's a beautiful spot.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and I'm lucky enough to have both of my daughter's schools directly across the street from my facility.
Oh, that's very nice.
So it's nice to have that.
And do they enjoy the program?
Yeah, my youngest daughter is 8, and she's actually a petite 8-year-old. So, and she hasn't yet shown, she's just starting to show some interest in it. Mm-hmm. So obviously it's something you want to do when they become interested. And she's a little bit small yet to work on the machines that I have.
Okay.
But when we go to the playground, we'll do pull-ups. I mean, I guess that just the other day I caught her doing push-ups when she was watching SpongeBob. And my other daughter, Georgia, has been strength training since she was 6, on and off, depending upon what other after-school activities that she has. You know, sometimes they just bombard these children with homework. And so I can't say that she comes every week, mm-hmm. but she trains with me often. And the nice thing about strength training for children is that they really, really enjoy feeling their bodies become stronger. It's something that I wish adults would have the same feeling for.
Yeah, that would be good.
But I think that it's especially noticeable in children. It really is something that they like, something that they enjoy. And because it's so brief and infrequent, it's really something that they'll never get bored of.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, that's great. Now, in your book, you also talk about the Strong Kids, Healthy Kids eating plan. And we only have a few minutes, but if you wanted to touch a little bit on that.
Yeah. Well, basically, it's real food. I urge parents who are to feed their children real food.
Meaning yes.
If it walked, crawled, flew, or swam, or grew out of the ground, it's real. Especially for children. Children need a lot of fat, they need a lot of cholesterol, and they need adequate protein.
Yes.
The way to look at it is if it comes in a box, or if it's manufactured,
mm-hmm.
you probably shouldn't be eating it, or eating very, very little of it. Pasta, rices, things of this kind. These are all manufactured processed foods. Those kinds of foods should be condiment-sized. If given to a child at all. I don't think my children have ever had a bowl of breakfast cereal in their entire lives.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, that's the one thing that's tricky. You know, I buy the whole grain kind, but I'm still having trouble. You know, certain things are tough to get rid of, but I figure, you know, it's about choices as well. If you're going to give the cereal, then try to get the lowest sugar, highest fiber you can get. You know, yeah, things like that. But that's terrific.
Right, if you lean more towards the side of real food, and less on the side of manufactured food, you're on course.
Yes.
If you can get your children to eat only real food and non-manufactured food, hey, then you're batting 1,000.
Oh, yeah. That's terrific.
You know, you have to balance it. You got to figure it. And the more you introduce real foods, the more that they'll start accepting them.
And yeah, it's true.
It's a matter of doing it. You know, you got to, as a parent, you have to say, okay, I'm going to get up a half hour earlier, and I'm gonna make my child's lunch, and I'm gonna make my child's breakfast. I'm not just gonna put a bowl of Fruit Loops in front of them. I'm gonna scramble up some eggs. I'm going to put some roll up avocado with grass-fed roast beef. I'm gonna like slice up on the strawberries and blueberries rather than give them a Pop Tart.
Oh gosh, a Pop Tart. Yeah, with like 5,000 ingredients. Most of them, I don't even know what the heck they are. Yeah, definitely. I'm so glad that you're talking about the real food. I think it's so important. And, you know, I wanted to say in your book, in the conclusion of Strong Kids, Healthy Kids, you write, quote, our children are our legacy. Giving them the very best in exercise and nutrition should not be an afterthought. It should be what concerns us most and what we strive for on a daily basis. So, Fred, I want to thank you for writing this fantastic book that a parent, you know, can get. Parents can get, and even if they haven't done this yet, it's a great place to start. So I want to thank you for that.
My pleasure.
And I want to thank you so much for joining me today, and joining us, I should say. And tell us how to learn more, and if people are in Manhattan.
Sure. Well, the website, the main website is SeriousStrength.com. The specific website for Strong Kids Healthy Kids is StrongKidsHealthyKids.com. So both of those websites, all of our information, our phone numbers, our addresses are all available there. And I personally answer all emails. So if anybody listening to the show, any parent who's listening, has a specific question, if you email me, I will personally answer you, guaranteed, I promise.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Fred, I want to thank you so much. And I'd love to have you come back sometime. I loved speaking with you. It was really a pleasure. And if people thank you, and if people want to contact me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great week, and keep being healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.